I had the privilege of pastoring two CMC churches over the past 20 years. The first was a smaller, less traditional church in a suburban setting, made up of mostly people from non-Mennonite backgrounds. The second was a larger, more traditional church in the middle of a rural Mennonite community. Two very different churches, but I enjoyed the benefits and challenges of both, and it has given me a broader perspective on pastoral leadership and local church administration. While the trellises were different, the goal of both was to support a healthy, growing vine. Let me explain what I mean. Colin Marshall, in his book, The Trellis and the Vine, talks about how the imagery of a trellis and a vine illustrates the life and function of a church. He says that the basic work of any Christian ministry is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ in the power of God's Spirit and to see people converted, changed, and growing to maturity in that gospel. Colin describes that as vine work, the work of planting, watering, fertilizing, and tending the spiritual life of the church. He goes on to say that just as a vine needs some sort of structure or framework to grow on in order to remain healthy and fruitful, so churches need some kind of structure to support the spiritual life and growth of the church. As the spiritual vine grows, the trellis also needs to be strengthened. Finances, infrastructure, organization, administration, that's where that comes in. This Colin describes as trellis work. While it's not the main thing, trellis work is an important part of developing healthy, growing churches. Having said that, here's the challenge for administrative types like myself. You can get so concerned and consumed with maintaining and upgrading the trellis that you start paying less and less attention to the vine. Worst case scenario, the entire congregation becomes consumed with trellis work, serving on committees, going to meetings, keeping programs alive, attending activities, doing fundraisers, on and on. And there ends up being only a handful of people that are actually doing the work of tending the vine and cultivating and nurturing the spiritual life of the congregation. When most of the energy expended in our churches is on trellis work than vine work, we're in trouble. So while some kind of structure, organization, and programming is necessary and helpful for the church, we must remember that it is only good if it serves to foster and facilitate spiritual life and growth within the congregation, not if it distracts from it. For this reason, I've become a big proponent of keeping it simple when it comes to the organizational structure and programming of the church. The more complex those things become, the more likely it is that most of our time and energy will go towards trellis work rather than vine work. While much could be said about keeping a church's programming simple, for the purposes of this session, I'd like to focus in on the organizational structure of the church. In Acts 6, the church is growing, and it becomes impossible for the apostles to do everything that needs to be done while also praying, preaching, and leading the church. Specifically, the widows among the Grecian Jews were being overlooked in the daily distribution of bread. So the leadership team of apostles gathers the people together, said, "Let's appoint a team to take on this responsibility." This proposal proved to be a good one as the congregation approved, embraced, and implemented the plan. I like the simplicity of this example. Basically, a leadership team providing overall leadership for the church, engaging the congregation in a decision affecting the life and direction of the church by presenting a proposal for change, and then appointing a team to carry out the specific task or area of ministry. Most churches' organizational structures are much more complex than that. Maybe you have a paid pastoral staff and then elected or appointed elders, possibly a church council made up of a combination of elected members and others who hold seats automatically because of some other position they hold. And then there are other elected or appointed committees or individuals to keep the program of the church running. It becomes quite complex to understand and explain how these groups all relate to each other. Something comes up and you're not quite sure whether this is an issue that should be addressed by the elders or by the church council, or maybe the pastoral staff should just make the decision and go ahead themselves. What if two or more of these decision-making bodies disagree on what should be done, or whose jurisdiction it is to make this decision? It can become complicated, not to mention then trying to figure out where does congregational voting fit into all of this. With a complex organizational structure, it's not hard to see how a large amount of time and energy can be poured into maintaining the trellis to the neglect of tending the vine. Let's go back to the model we see in Acts 6. One leadership team engaging the congregation on matters of importance for the life and direction of the church, and then appointing other teams for specific tasks or areas of ministry. In my humble opinion, supported by my understanding of Scripture and my experience as a pastor and overseer, this is an excellent model for keeping a church's organizational structure simple, healthy, and effective. Let's take a look at each one of the three elements I mentioned. The first one, one leadership team. See, every church has leadership of some kind, so let's focus in on the modifying words. The first one is one. My observation has been that when there are multiple governing bodies in a church, most often in our circles, that would be an elder team and a church council, there are more opportunities for confusion, misunderstanding, disunity, things getting really bogged down. When I was a teenager, I worked for a landscaping company on a tree trimming crew. I still remember the three basic instructions we followed when trimming a tree. The first one was to remove dead, diseased, and damaged wood. The second one was to remove crossing branches. Makes sense. The third one was to trim back to one leader. See, for most trees to grow strong, healthy, and beautiful, there should be one clearly identifiable leader branch coming vertically out of the top of the trunk, extending to become the highest point of the tree. What are known then as scaffolding branches are the one that come off the trunk and the leader branch at an angle. If you start pruning a tree when it's very young, you actually prune in it a way that is called training the leader, which allows more of the energy and growth of the tree to go into that branch so it becomes big and strong and able to support the scaffolding branches. If another branch comes off the trunk or leader branch at too close to a vertical angle, it should be removed, as it will eventually become a point of weakness in the tree. I often think about the tree as a metaphor for spiritual life, both personally and corporately. You have the tree planted by the rivers of water in Psalm 1, the vine and the branches in John 15. I've considered how my training as a tree trimmer might apply. Two governing bodies in a church seem to me like a tree that has two leader branches growing out of the same trunk, which ultimately weakens the tree. Now please understand, I'm not saying it's impossible for a church to be healthy and fruitful if you have both an elder team and a church council. If the roles and responsibilities of each group are clearly defined, it can work. But with two governing bodies, there will always be more potential for confusion, crossing lines of authority, disunity, and an inordinate amount of time being spent on maintaining the trellis rather than tending the vine. The other key word here is team. While I'm all for trimming the tree back to one leader, I don't view that as one person, rather one leadership branch or one leadership body. The New Testament supports a team leadership approach. Ephesians 4:11 and 12 says, "So Christ himself gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors, and teachers to equip his people for works of service, so that the body of Christ may be built up." While there are a lot of gifted senior pastors out there, we're foolish to believe that one pastor alone can fully provide all the leadership gifts mentioned in this text. I love seeing leadership teams made up of pastors and elders where all these gifts are present. Or it isn't a one-man show, but together a team is leading, providing and processing vision, discerning direction, and equipping the congregation. Sure, the team members will have different levels of responsibility, different roles. Some of them may be pastors in charge of overseeing the day-to-day ministry of the church, while others may be elders whose primary function is to speak into the bigger picture issues of the church. Some may be more in the public eye, while others are more behind the scenes. Some may be seasoned leaders carrying a lot of responsibility, while others are just kind of learning the ropes. But together, they are functioning effectively as a leadership team. From the perspective of the congregation and within the team itself, of course, the senior pastor functions as what some would call the first among equals. But it's the team and not an individual that together leads the church. I believe team leadership, as described in Ephesians 4, provides the greatest potential for a church to be built up and to grow to maturity. Another aspect of the simple organizational structure modeled in Acts 6 is an engaged congregation. The leadership team of apostles engaged the congregation on a matter of importance for the life and direction of the church. Specifically, they announced a proposal to appoint a team to oversee the distribution of bread to the widows. Verse 5 says, "This proposal pleased the whole group." One way to explain what I mean by an engaged congregation is to place it on a spectrum, where at one end of the spectrum is an uninvolved congregation, and at the other end is an in-charge congregation. An engaged congregation falls somewhere near the middle. At the uninvolved end of the spectrum, you have a congregation that is full of spectators. They don't participate at all in the decisions regarding the life and direction of the church. It's a consumer kind of Christianity, where the leadership of the church cranks out a product, and the members of the congregation vote on this product with their feet. When they no longer like the product, they just get up and walk out, and they find a product somewhere else that they like better. At the other end of the spectrum, where the congregation is in charge, nothing happens without a congregational vote. In fact, the congregation even votes on whether they should vote. I've known of a couple of cases where a certain issue was being discussed in the church, and the congregation voted first, not on the issue itself, but on whether they thought it was time to bring this issue to a vote. In a church where the congregation is in charge, the leaders don't really lead. Rather, they function as pollsters, constantly gauging the opinions and wishes of the congregation. Somewhere in the middle of this spectrum is the engaged congregation. The leadership team leads, seeking God's wisdom and sensing His direction for the life and future of the church. They bring what they believe is Spirit-led direction to the church, and then whether it's through a formal vote or an invitation to offer feedback, they give the congregation the opportunity to engage and speak into the life and direction of the church. This is one way, I believe, in which the priesthood of all believers is practiced in a local church. Keeping a church's organizational structure simple, so more time can be spent tending the vine than maintaining the trellis, includes, in my opinion, one leadership team leading the way, a congregation that is neither uninvolved nor in charge, but appropriately engaged in matters affecting the life and direction of the church. And then, in the model we see in Acts 6, there are appointed teams for specific areas of ministry. The leadership team can't and shouldn't do everything there is to do in the church. In Acts 6, they appointed a team to oversee the distribution of bread to the widows. Today in our churches, we might appoint a deacon team to field requests for financial and other assistance from people in the congregation or in the community. We might appoint a finance team to oversee the budget, the income and expenditures of the church. We might appoint a team of Sunday school superintendents to select curriculum and teachers for the many different age groups of the church. We might appoint a missions team to help equip the congregation for evangelism and outreach opportunities in our neighborhood and around the world. The organizational structure I've outlined, one leadership team, a congregation that is engaged in matters affecting the life and future of the church, and then teams appointed for specific areas of ministry, is certainly not the only possible organizational structure for healthy, vibrant, and fruitful churches. But if you're in a place where you're rethinking structure, you're working towards a change from your current structure, I would encourage you this one thing. Keep it simple. Let's do all we can to help our congregations spend less time and energy maintaining the trellis and more time tending the vine.